Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere and even earn money. We like that. All in one place for totally free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. And here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your cellular telephone or your computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else, those other places that podcasts are heard.
Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. And when you want to take conversations with your fans to the next level, Q&As and polls are the best way to get them talking. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free. Zero catch. We've been using it ever since we started How Long Gone. And ever since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like having the option of turning off the Q&As and the polls on the user dashboard has really helped boost my creativity and take it to another level. I highly recommend giving it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. You know, I'm just over here having a chill Tuesday, drinking some coffee. It's very somber over here in Glendale. Bay is working all week. It's just so me and the pooches.
Look, I'm going through it myself over here. I don't know if you heard about what happened.
Well, a lot of stuff happened since we last spoke, so it could be any number of things, Chris. Hopefully the Olympics haven't got to you. I don't know what it could be.
You know, I just don't trust myself as much as I used to, and I don't know if it's, you know, my age, but I'm getting a little more nervous when I podcast.
I don't know if it's your age, because you should be getting less nervous the more you podcast, just broad strokes, first glance.
No, I mean, you're right. You're right. Last episode, I wanted to do it for myself. This episode, I need to do it for myself, and I can't do it for other people. It just hurts my heart so badly when I podcast for other people. Do you ever get that feeling?
I don't know if I've ever podcasted for other people. Usually whenever I podcast, it's always quite selfish, and I'm really pretty much just trying to look funnier, better, and smarter than everyone else involved in whatever podcast I'm taking part
Good.
In. Not this one, of course, but
after my performance on the last podcast, you know, I stepped out of bounds a few times. I had some deductions, and I was ready to bow out, but you have talked me back onto the uneven bars, Jason. So I want to thank you for that.
Okay, so you have to learn that not every podcast is going to be gold, Chris.
Yeah. It's a team sport, and if we're getting a bronze, you know, you can still bite into that for the Sports Illustrated picture. I just think of us as a gold medal podcast.
We are a gold medal podcast.
What I mean?
Don't worry.
No, okay.
But you know, even Phelps is going to have a bad day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. When Phelps crashed the Jeep Wrangler into a wall when he was gone
Phelps
off the perkies,
he had more than one bad day. I mean,
Phelps had a bad couple years.
Okay. Well, he had some bad times, sure, but he never really had too much of a bad day in the pool, though.
No, he didn't. But I've been glued to the Olympics, which I know may surprise you, but I'm in Atlanta.
At the time, nobody even knows how to watch the Olympics anymore. You have to literally be watching it in your parents' house on their basic cable plan. Is that what you're doing, Chris?
That is exactly what I'm doing. But so we were looking into Michael Phelps, who's now he's like a commentator, but he's got three kids. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I mean, I don't really know anything about Michael Phelps at all, except good swimmer, then became kind of like a spokesperson for marijuana use. And he, since he's white and a guy, he seemed to have no problems with that. He was never disqualified or anything like that.
Yeah, I just want to quickly go over his kids' names because they were pretty surprising to me.
Okay.
This actually, it sounds like three distinct Black Rifle coffee flavors. Boomer, Maverick, and Beckett.
And the weirdest part, all girls.
Yeah, the wildest thing is, yeah, so I've been watching the Olympics pretty seriously. I don't know if you've been tuning into the games, but
fuck no.
I watched these divers, bro. Oh my god, these male divers, fam. These guys got abs. They're looking fucking crazy.
Yeah,
man.
Of course.
I mean, not like so ripped.
When I was
so
talking about my Phelps rundown of what I know about him before, other than, you know, being swimmer, having one of the sickest bodies of all time, like, you know, for being somebody who's not like a weightlifter, gym rat kind of guy, just your natural swimming muscles, like,
he looks good. I mean, look, I've been watching the Olympics. I've been cramming. I'm sad to see Simone Biles bow out because she lost, you know, and didn't want to lose more.
Because that just happened, you know, for listeners listening, you know, this is probably old news for them, but this was just surfacing when we recorded this podcast. So I don't exactly know what happened. So she didn't win the gold medal and she's now pulling herself out of the Olympics?
Not that she didn't win the gold medal. She had a poor performance last night in the team competition, and then came out and said, basically, I just can't do it. It's kind of which I mean, obviously there's been a lot of conversations around like athletes and mental health and you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sure.
Yeah.
But in this case, the timing feels very interesting. Like Naomi Osaka said, I don't want to talk to the press, and then they were like, well, you have to, and she's like, nah, fuck y'all, which I kind of understand a little bit more.
Yeah.
Simone Biles, the greatest of all time, no question. She's already solidified as the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Said, I had a bad one, and now I'm not feeling good about myself, you know, which is like, yeah, that's what happens when you have a bad performance doing anything. Mm-hmm. Like, if I go to Barry's and I don't get 3 on the treadmill, I don't get my money back. that's just how the cookie crumbles. Okay. You know what I mean?
So the future generation of athletes might be rewriting what it means to be a champion for our kind of our boomer ears, you know, back in the day, you know, you never give up.
Exactly.
Well, you know, against all odds.
Leave it all
in
the field.
Like if you're a basketball player, even if you're down by 20, you play until the last second.
Exactly. Hustle.
If you're a baseball player and you do an easy pop up, you run it out every time. That's just what they teach you. It's part of being an athlete, a champion, you know, sportsmanship. And learning how to take an L, and I, you know, maybe she, I mean, she really, like you said before, she really is the greatest. So maybe
greatest,
she's like
the goat. I mean, no
she's
question.
Like, damn, this is the first time I've ever lost anything.
Fuck this.
And this is a hat that I just tried on, and I don't like how it feels. So fuck y'all. Maybe it's just as simple as that.
It could be, and that's. But I think that a true champion would just take the L. Like, I'm going to keep competing and lose, and I've already got 5 gold medals. Fuck it, I'm still the best. You know, I don't know. It's
okay.
An
well,
interesting...
maybe let me try to put this gold medal around the neck of somebody that you might be able to wrap your head around more, wrap your neck around more.
Okay.
So,
okay.
How would you feel if, let's say, Hailey Bieber went to One Oak and they didn't let her in at the door, and then the next day she went on Instagram and said, you know what, fuck this, I'm never going to the club again, I'm over it, the whole club system is trash. Would you congratulate her and say, yes, queen, the club system is trash, that is bad, it is, you know, being denied at the door is bad for your mental health?
No,
would
I wouldn't, Jason. I
would
say,
pick yourself up and try again.
Here's what I would say. I would say, go back to Calabasas, put on your tightest bodycon dress, and you get back out there and you fucking do this again until you get in. You pray to Jesus and you bring your famous husband if you have to, but they're gonna let you in. Okay. I'm not gonna stand for this shit, Jason. And I think that, thank you for making that a little easier for me to comprehend.
Google Translate for you. What brand bodycon dress does she need to reach for in order to get through those velvet ropes at One Oak?
I mean, I'm not sure what kind of deals she's working with. I imagine she probably has a Calvin Klein contract. I'm sure there could be a Saint Laurent deal. Whoever's paying her the most.
I'm not wearing Calvin to the club. I need something a little nastier. We're not going full Fashion Nova, but, you know.
I mean.
And I know that bodycon is not your particular branch of fashion.
I'm not into sexy clothing, as you know. I mean.
You don't have to answer it now. Come back to me. Maybe our listeners will, you know, our listeners DM Chris with the perfect. Just let him know. Flood the inbox.
Please don't. But I'm just suffering from riches over. I got too many riches today because we also have. I don't want to, you know, just end beginning begin and end with sports because that's not what this podcast is about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were able to catch the Young Thug NPR Tiny Desk concert, where he is now in an alternative press style punk band that sucks.
Yeah, it's definitely a good example of you know, the music industry ruining everything all over again. I did watch a little bit of that, and you know, it was not a Tiny Desk concert. It was in the backyard of a mansion somewhere in like Tallahassee or something.
They still call it a Tiny Desk concert. Just so
I know.
Understand.
I know. So that part, I don't like that. It's not a Tiny Desk concert.
You're already mad.
There's nothing. Yeah, and the whole point of a Tiny Desk concert, you know, it's like when a band gets asked to do MTV's Unplugged and they're like, yeah, I'm going to bring my fucking electric guitar, my synths.
I'm going to play a Telecaster, but it's going to be low. Like, I'm going to turn it down in the Fender tube. You know what I mean?
It's all bullshit. It was so bad. And it was the thing that pisses me. I mean, there's two things that piss me off a lot about it is Thug has been a brain dead rapper for a while now. He hasn't, mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time a Young Thug song came out where I was like, oh, this is sick. Obviously I've loved his, you know, many of his songs for many years, but
it's been 5+ since a good,
but
one.
His rapping was very clear and like decently calculated. And like, that was probably his best rapping performance I've heard him live in, you know, since I can remember. Mm-hmm. And it was a shame that was wasted on mm-hmm. four studio musicians wearing pink crop top hoodies in the backyard of a mansion, you know, just guys, you know, just like the most basic ass bros you've ever seen in your entire life who are like excited to do like pop punk cosplay. And it just made me think of the Young Thug of, you know, Pikachu era, where he was so unique.
Ooh.
He was so interesting. He was so creative. He so didn't care about everything. And he just, you know, bucked the system. He was, whatever was happening in the norm, he was the opposite.
Another rapper linking up with Travis Barker and getting his career ruined. Well, I think that there's a possibility.
He's doing it worse than Olivia Rodrigo. Like, it's bad, bro.
Olivia Rodrigo's doing it well. This shit trash. But I think that he has an album coming out, and I want you to guess what the title is before we tease our guest.
I mean, is it involving sex or lean?
Neither one. That's the problem. It's just simply titled Punk in all caps.
God damn it. I mean, that's the...
So, just so we know what to expect, at least, he's not surprising us. He's letting us know exactly off rip what's happening. But does that make it better or worse? I guess
it makes it better, because when Young Thug first came out, he really was like the definition of punk. And now that he's making his punk album that is called Punk,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't be further from that.
Yeah,
which I don't know like I said before, it's a testament to how terrible the music industry is. I don't know how much of that is his fault and how much of that is this beautiful, unique flower that has been compromised by a bunch of frat bro A&Rs who are more concerned with, you know, college football than, you know, discovering cool and unique music. We need more women in the industry.
I saw a video of Willow Smith doing like a punk version of Whip My Hair Back and Forth, where she dramatically shaved her head.
I saw that.
I mean, this is fucking insane, dude. That is so lame. Deeply lame.
That is so deeply lame. And, you know, everyone on her team was probably like, yes, this is going to be it. This is going to be sick.
Yeah.
And gassed her up.
This is her red table.
You know what? There were a lot of through lines, and I'll talk to our guest about this more, because it's this thing that a lot of people have been watching. But it reminded me of the Woodstock 99 documentary that just came out over the weekend on HBO that a lot of people are talking about. But there is the scene, which I forgot, you know, so many things that I forgot from 99, but where Wyclef recreates the Jimi Hendrix playing the Star-Spangled Banner,
so,
and then lights his guitar on fire. But
it has a hard time lighting it on
has
fire.
Has a very hard time lighting. Yeah, like all the technology of 1969, Jimi Hendrix was able to light a guitar on fire, no problemo. You squirt lighter fluid on it, and you strike a match, and then it goes up.
And you light it.
Wyclef, he needed five different people. He could never light it. He smashed it, and it was just so not
pathetic.
And the dark part is, you know, in their head,
they think it's
when
it.
They think of this idea, they're like, this is going to be it. This is my fucking moment. I'm going to change the game forever. And then everyone in their camp is like, yes, bro. Yes, bro, this is going to be so sick. I'm so proud of you. I'm so happy for this moment.
It didn't.
And nobody in his camp is just like, well, maybe we need to
just play Gone Till November, fam. Like, that's what we want, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, all right, we need to talk about Jesse. Jesse Pearson was the editor-in-chief of Vice Magazine from 2002 to 2010. He then started a great magazine called Apology that is also a podcast now. He's been involved in a bunch of the Vice TV projects, and he also worked at Index Magazine, which is my favorite magazine of all time.
Oh, really?
In New York. But how he got his start in his career. So I can't wait to dig into that with him, as well as his absolute love of the band Rusted Root from Woodstock 99. It's going to be great to get into that with him.
Okay, let's give this rusted man a Zoom.
Hey there, overwhelmed foodies. Are you drowning in a sea of meal kit options, feeling like you're in a bad dating game where every contestant looks the same? Fear not, because amidst the chaos, there's one shining star worth your culinary affection. Home Chef is not just another fish in the meal kit sea. They're the gourmet catch that you've been dreaming of. Say goodbye to swiping left on lackluster meals and swipe right for the one brand that will make your taste buds swoon.
Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, I like to chop myself, or quick microwave meals that are assembled in minutes, Home Chef has you and your entire family covered for delicious meals, 30 options per week, and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. I'm keto now. Not only is it convenient, but it is also economical. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Mamma mia.
For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners, our listeners, 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/howlong. That's homechef.com/howlong for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. homechef.com/howlong. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. I compromise every day, Jason, as you know, because that's kind of part of being a good friend and partner.
Oh, wow.
I am forced to keep food in my refrigerator against my will because my wife demands it. But when it comes to your health, Jason, there's absolutely no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, or their crossword puzzles just because they're available right now, or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. I know you have sketchy insurance, Jason. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and most importantly, prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All these doctors are real, with verified reviews from actual patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists near you, or if you want to book one far away from you, that's your decision. Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Booking.com. Booking.yeah. From cozy bed and breakfast to trendy boutique hotels, with so many choices across the beautiful United States of America, you can book whoever you want to be. That can look like booking a 5-star hotel to indulge your luxury side, that's me, or booking a remote cabin in the woods to explore your adventurous side.
So spring has sprung, the sun is out, the sun is shining, I can't wait to get to New York. Check out Booking.com for your ideal hotel or vacation home, no matter where you go in the U.S.
Booking.yeah.
Book whoever you want to be on Booking.com. Booking.yeah. How are you? You're coming in from New York City, is that true?
L.A. LA.
Oh, shit.
Damn, what's up, baby? Are you Hollywood now?
I'm living in West Hollywood. No, I'm living in, I'm over, in, I'm in a neighborhood that doesn't have a cool name, so I don't like saying it.
Downtown?
No, Herman. I'm in Herman.
Herman?
What the fuck is Herman?
Herman?
Yeah.
I think that's Jason's uncle from Virginia. Are you sure?
I think is Herman on the way to Barstow?
No, that's Norman. That's Norman. Herman is this like, it's like a sliver in between Highland Park and South Pass.
Very interesting.
Yeah, little isthmus.
Okay. Not that, I mean, Jason is a lifelong LA resident. I'm pretty familiar and I live there part time, but Jason, have you ever heard of Herman?
I've never heard of Herman, but I just gave it a quick Google map. And is this over by Arroyo Seco Park?
Exactly.
Okay. So yeah, sometimes Chris and I have played tennis over there a few times. Tim, that's Tim's spot, but, amazing neighborhood over there.
Oh, okay.
Amazing neighborhood. Whenever I go play tennis over there and I'm driving through, all those houses. It's always hot as fuck. It's just for some reason,
even though it feels
more like foresty and wildernessy. It's like 10 degrees hotter than
it is.
You know,
yeah, it's like living. It's like living inside a cast iron skillet. And I just moved here like 3 weeks ago. I was up in Mount Washington, in like the forested hills where it's nice and breezy, and then I came down here to the flats where it's basically I cook all day long. But it is a great neighborhood. It is great. Yeah, I like it. It's got its own sign.
I love this LA journey for you. I didn't know you were a classic New York to LA graduate.
I am.
Like myself.
I've been here for 6 years. But even, Chris, before here, I spent 2 years in Atlanta.
Oh, shit.
Baby! I didn't know. I'm in Atlanta right now.
Wow.
And it is hot as hell, as you can imagine. And I might just stay, though, because the mask is nowhere to be found. So there are the upsides to this. There's a tennis tournament tonight or in town that I'm going to tonight, and I'm a little concerned for my well-being in this heat, even when the sun goes down.
I would be, too, yeah. But I've heard that the Delta variant doesn't really transmit in extreme humidity, so I guess you'll be fine, probably.
Oh, damn, so we're good. Damn, good to know. Thanks, Dr. Jesse.
That makes me feel better, because earlier in the week I was complaining about a guy who kept coughing in the sauna, so, I mean... if you could name a more human environment than that, I'll wait.
I challenge
you. Saunas are safe.
Why did you live here? Were you working at like an Adult Swim situation?
I was at Adult Swim adjacent. My wife at the time was working at Adult Swim, so we went down there from New York. And I gotta say, man, Atlanta didn't really treat me very well. It was kind of a hell ride.
Hell ride?
Yeah, bitch.
A haunted hell ride? Go on.
You can't come. That's because you didn't tap in with me, bro. You gotta come on, man. You tap in with the local.
I was with locals. Well, transplants. My only friends there were the ATL twins. Let's just
okay. So
let's just get it out there and say.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I mean, to even call them a friend is something quite special.
Yeah. I like that you're using the singular as well.
Well, they travel in a pack.
I didn't know. I mean, look, I can understand that. I mean, I'm born and raised here, and like I don't really have that many friends left, if I'm being honest. And I come, I see my family, I go to a few restaurants, I try to check out a few new restaurants, then I leave.
Yeah.
I don't know if coming down here blind would be the move. You know what I mean? What were you into? What were you doing at the time in your life?
Well, I was working on Apology, my magazine, obviously. That's and then writing freelance journalism here and there. Other than that, I hung out with the twins and I power lifted.
What?
Oh shit.
Damn, you're the perfect how long gone guest. Where were you lifting in the ATL?
It was called Unit 2 Fitness right off Ponce in Midtown.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with Unit 2. And that's is that a little nod to Hollywood? You know when you have two units running? I wonder if it
is.
Oh
wow. That's a pretty deep reference for those dudes, if so. I don't think so, man.
Yeah, they're probably not. Where were your haunts though? Were you going anywhere? Were you hitting Aurora for a coffee? Were you getting were you going to the Varsity for a hamburger? What kind of vibe? How were you living?
I was going to Unit 2, and then I was going home.
Okay. All right. Well, okay, fair enough.
So you were living a very Action Bronson-style existence.
Yeah. I was a Spartan. No, I mean, I was going to...
Gym, write, repeat was your mantra.
Gym, write, edit, repeat.
Got it.
Yeah. Real excited. No, I mean, look at...
No fucking pussies allowed.
No pussies.
Yeah.
Not for me. No, I mean, Atlanta was like, you know, in Greek myth, when the gods like curse a mortal and just throw a bunch of horrible shit at him.
Sure.
That's what it was for me. I mean, just I don't know why, but everything went wrong. Like, I remember my second week there, we were a pipe burst in our bedroom. So we woke up being sprayed with cold water in the middle of the night. So while that was being fixed, I had to sleep on a couch in the day room, like in the front. Coming from New York, where I was used to living like on the fifth floor, the fourth floor, I was always sleeping next to open windows.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to me, don't do that in Midtown Atlanta, right?
Could you explain why not for our uninitiated listeners?
Because miscreants wander. They wander the streets.
We're talking about a breaking and entering?
We're talking about I woke up with a guy who looked, and I'm not, this is not hyperbole, looked exactly like John Wayne Gacy halfway in my window. Terrified.
Shit,
and I jumped up and I screamed and I literally hit swung at him with a pillow.
Okay. a classic powerlifter's move.
Right, exactly. I was going to show him how we do. And he dropped out of the window.
You didn't live here long enough to buy a gun. I guess that's
I had actually no, I actually had numerous guns, but they came a couple weeks later.
Oh, I see. So it was new. Your Walmart order hadn't
shipped yet. So the main reason why you had problems in Atlanta, Georgia was shipping delays on the firearm.
Right, right. Background checks. That was the problem.
Okay. So not even the ATL twins could save you, is what you're saying.
No. They don't have superpowers, believe it or not.
As much as we'd like to believe.
You know Thomas Morton, right, Chris? I know.
Do. I do know Thomas very well. Jason, Thomas is an old friend of both of ours, but he's actually from here as well.
Okay.
But he's like an OG. You remember him from Vice. He was like the nerdy white guy who they'd send into crazy situations.
Oh, yeah.
Baby balls.
Baby balls. Yeah, you may know him by his pseudonym.
By his work name, Baby Balls. But yeah, his dad had passed like a year before. He came down to visit and he was like, "Hey, I have something for you if you want it. I have a toolbox full of guns that you can take because I don't know where to put them. My mom doesn't want them in the house." So I met up with him and he gave me, you know, like a craftsman toolbox with I think four firearms in it.
Baby Balls delivered.
The
blick. You were strapped up.
He came through. Baby Balls came
strapped
through.
Okay, so were you a gun guy before this?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I did a thing. I got Vice to pay for. I used to get Vice to just pay for stuff I wanted to do. You know.
Yeah, I've read that Vice does that.
You know, sometimes I don't know about. I don't know about currently.
Yeah, Jason remembers the gross jar. You know, pretty well. So I think that's what he's talking about.
Did you witness the gross jar in person?
No, never did. Never got a whiff.
I unfortunately have. I've witnessed the gross jar in person. It's too far.
I feel like Chris, you might have been there the day that we opened it and tie dyed some t-shirts with the liquid that was inside.
Oh
no, I did miss that day. Thank God. But I sorry to distract from the weapons.
But wait. Should we say what the gross jar was, or just let people kind of...
Yeah. I think a lot of our young, hip listeners might not know what that is.
And that's a shame that they don't. That's like not knowing like who the Sex Pistols were or something. Like, we got to educate these kids.
I agree. A fine analogy.
The gross jar was a huge pickle jar, like an industrial-sized pickle jar that we would just put horrible things in. It started with basic stuff like urine and shit and blood. I think the best thing was one day we came into the office and found a rat had like come up through the pipes into the toilet and drowned in there.
Okay. That feels gross to me.
Very much so. So we put the entire rat in there. Thomas once had to give his cat like a radioactive medicine to like, I forget what it was, but basically he had radioactive cat shit. So we put that in there. Just things like that. And then we would do a monthly report on it in the magazine and on the website. So anyway.
Yeah. Every month you would pick up the Vice magazine and there would be like an update. Like, here's what the gross jar looks like now.
Right,
you know,
right.
Here's how it has decomposed. Here's all the new bacterial growth, fungi, and stuff like that.
Back when Vice did real journalism.
Exactly.
Honestly, I'd rather read that than another report on like, you know, war crimes.
You know what I mean? Well, me too.
I'm not a gross guy. I like don't like gross stuff, actually, but I found that very funny. I found that really, really funny. It was just so stupid.
we made it work somehow, yeah. But anyway, yeah, guns. Yeah, so I got Vice to pay for me to go to this this like survivalist training camp in the Nevada desert to take like a 4-day handgun course that was like one of the most fun weekends I've ever had. They had like a fake suburban house set up out there in the desert in the town of Pahrump, Nevada.
Oh yeah,
And you did a fake home, like a home invasion scenario, sick. Right? With live ammo, with like, you know, so this like a piece of wood with like one of those like target guys taped to it would pop up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had the one where it's the guy holding a gun to a woman's head. Have you ever seen that one?
Classic hostage situation.
Oh yeah,
you know the one. Yeah. And she kind of looks like Elaine from Seinfeld, by the way. But anyway. But it pops up, and the guy who's training me and walking
me—there's a story there.
The guy who's walking me through it. When that one pops up, he goes, "Put the gun down, or I'm going to kill this bitch." So he's like, kind of like giving me like a role playing aspect.
He's narrating.
To it as well.
We're narrating what this cardboard cutout might have said.
Right, and that meant that I was allowed to shoot that guy. So anyway, yeah, it was really, it was really fun. But I had a history of like, you know, just going to the gun range and everything before that too.
Are you from New Jersey?
I'm from like multiple Philadelphia suburbs in PA and New Jersey.
We shit on Philadelphia a lot on this podcast. So
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that.
Really? How have you heard that?
I put on one random. I've listened to like a few when you guys. I mean, I've listened to a few before, but when you guys asked me to be on, I listened to a few pointedly. You're welcome. And there was a woman was on who was in Philly, and you guys were ragging pretty hard. It was only a few episodes back, I think. I can't remember her.
Yeah, Chrissy Malazzo, right. Friend of the show. Right. Yeah, well, I mean, she also relocated there like kind of willy-nilly for a man.
Right.
You know, and it just seems like a crazy place to move. You know?
My deal with Philly is I love it, but I totally understand why people who aren't from there don't love it.
And a smart man should feel that way about any city they live in.
I think you're right, yeah.
Good point.
Well, I'm glad that you're listening to the pod. That is
me too.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it makes me feel good too. We like to have, you know, successful, intelligent listeners as well as dumbs. We try to run the gamut.
I'm not sure which.
So
one
you decide
I fall
which
into.
One you are. Yeah, you decide which one. That was kind of the game.
No, there. you're not on the dumb scale. Don't worry, Jesse.
Let's wait till the end of the conversation, then you can decide.
How much DJing have you done? That'll affect it.
I've done a lot of DJing.
Okay, that's not going to help you out then.
Hell yeah.
Unfortunately, I had a fucking residency at Plaid on Union Square in the early 2000s.
Oh shit. Ooh. Let's go, baby.
Yep.
We're going to do 30 minutes on Bar 13 APT. I mean, we could keep it going. You went to Bar 13 on Sunday night.
That was like the mod night, right?
Yeah, but it would be like the White Stripes and Jimmy Fallon and the Strokes doing coke. Like that era. Like the real prime era.
I was there.
Man.
I was there.
Jason, LA was different, bro. What were you doing?
Hanging out with Chad Muska, maybe. what was the restaurant that Ashton Kutcher owned? You were probably there with Chad Muska.
I mean, which one? He had a pretty diverse portfolio.
He had a portfolio, yeah.
Geisha House was the sushi. And then there was definitely an Italian place.
Geisha House, he was in there with my man, my
with
Scientology
your boy Masterson,
bro.
With your dog.
Right on.
I remember I got the whole boat sent out when I was with Masterson one time.
Masterson was impressed by that.
You were talking about Dolce?
Dolce.
No, it was the very first. There's one name that I really want to pick up on. It was the first one that they all owned, like the whole That 70s cast.
It's not Geisha House?
I do like that their Japanese restaurant, they managed to use like one of the most boring cultural stereotypes in the name, though.
I mean, that was during Entourage level discourse. Like, it was just, you know, you were lucky that you got Geisha House as a name. Like,
yeah, really.
Could have been worse. I've been to Dolce, actually had a location in Atlanta.
Before I
moved to New York. I've dined at Dolce. They expanded, but there was, I think they're, Jesse's right. I think there were like three restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was like Geisha House, Dolce, and there was one other one that they were really, but Jason definitely has eaten at all of those places, I would say.
Maybe ketchup?
I'm sorry I'm pulling you guys into the weeds on this. We can let it go, but there was one.
These are weeds that daddy likes, just to let you know.
This is where we live.
Maybe it was a nightclub. Wait, Hyde. Hyde.
Come on, bro. That's an ultra lounge. Ultra lounge with food. They have food there, right, Jason?
There's small bites, sure.
Small plates. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but all of Ashton
small plates.
All of Ashton and Wilmer's restaurants, they're more than just, you know, they're club like settings. You know, you can seamlessly transition from a dining experience into a cooking experience.
It's experiential.
Yeah, exactly. They
Let's
serve you
decks.
Ecstasy on a side plate with a knife and fork. It's different.
I liked when Ashton Kutcher showed up on Shark Tank as one of the sharks.
What a transformation to go from
really
the world's hottest dummy and to think of him and just how much of a dumb, like a doofus he was. And now he's like an entrepreneurial, inspirational tech leader.
Yeah, he's like Mark Cuban in training, man.
Damn. Well, I mean, Ashton is, but I feel like also, I feel like more so now than in our younger days, like actors are just happy to stop acting. It's like Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
Like Cameron Diaz makes wine now and she's married and has kids and is rich. And she's like, I'm good. I don't need to do this. Like I've found something else. I made a lot of money.
Not all actors really though, hot. Chris, some people cannot give up the spotlight and that's why they're doing like, they're, you know, hosting America's Got Talent and shit like that when they already have $400 million in the bank. Like,
but I mean, it's more acceptable now, I think, to walk away.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Than it was at that
time. It used
to
be a thing, like when like Greta Garbo stopped acting, it was like, it became the whole story about her. It was like a huge big deal. Like, where'd Garbo go? And now it's just kind of like, I haven't seen Cameron Diaz in a while. Big deal.
You just assume that they became an influencer or they just want to like raise their family and chill.
And this is because everybody in America is supposed to be an entrepreneur now.
That's right.
Damn, that's an interesting. That is as I mean, you know, Jesse, you've had jobs. Jason and I have never really had jobs, probably, you know, in some way.
You know, he ran Vice magazine. You know, there's a little bit of not real job energy that, going on there. No offense, of course.
No, it wasn't work ever. when you love what you do, it's not work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My dad is you know, he's always owned his own accounting business. So I think it was in my blood a little bit maybe, but I do think that the expectation now is you gotta rise and grind and get yours, and
yeah,
you everybody can do that, which is also like everybody shouldn't do this. It kind of sucks half the time.
It does. And I have a theory as to why this is, if you want to. I don't know if it's going to bore you, but I can throw it out there real quick.
No, we love theories.
Does it involve Chrissy Teigen or no?
How did you know?
Well, yeah, that's it. I'm an entrepreneur myself.
Well, it involves
been podcasting for a
it's
while.
It's actually now. John Legend, but Chrissy Teigen is, you know, next to him. So
a major player in the story. Yeah, please give us the theory. I'm interested.
And I don't think this is an original theory, but I haven't like read it anywhere else, so maybe it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the death of industry and like industrial jobs. You know, what happened was because my family was all steelworkers until me. Like, I'm the only, you know, one who like kind of like decided I'm going to be an artist of some kind. Everybody else was like literally working in an open hearth furnace and like getting steel embedded in their necks, you know.
So you're the first liberal pansy of the family, is what you're saying.
I'm the first real tough guy of the family, is what I'm saying.
Hey, tough guy, Hollywood. Hey, Hollywood.
One of my fucking cousins calls me Hollywood Jesse now. I'm not kidding.
I love that.
Hollywood Jesse, you think you're better than me? Fuck out of here.
Hollywood Jesse running a video department at Super Deluxe.
Big bad guy over at Super Deluxe.
Yeah, anyway, I'll do it fast.
Take your time.
Industrial jobs shut down because of stuff like NAFTA. Everybody, you know, couldn't find work. But then there was this thing that started then with the government saying, but you should be, you're a creative class. You can be entrepreneurs. You can do your own thing. You can start your Etsy account and knit macrame tapestries and make as much money as you would have at any other job doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this bullshit that was sold to us, I think.
You can be your own boss.
Yeah, but it's not true. Like Chris, you were saying, I think not everybody can do it, especially if it's creative stuff. Like this whole idea that everybody can be some kind of craftsperson is just wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's also, I tell people this all the time. It's also about, I think, the stomach for income spikes and dips is something that you have to like build up to. And I think if you're 30 and you've had a nice job with insurance and benefits and the whole thing, and then all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I think it's time to strike out on my own. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a year in, you lose a couple clients and you're like, shit, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's really like, not only are people just not good at stuff, you know what I mean, that's fine, I'm not good at stuff either, but I've made it work. I mainly think the trait is having the stomach for it, you know, and like and being willing to think that there's always, you're always going to figure it out.
I think you're right. I think you have to want to do the thing that you're doing enough that you're willing to be poor and then be rich and then be poor and then be poor and then be poor. You know, you got to be willing to take the ride.
Luckily I'm rich now.
And also, you know, a lot of the creative jobs, you know, like working in media or something like that, it's often reserved for people, you know, who come from wealthy backgrounds who can afford to intern at a magazine or a fashion house, something
don't
like that.
Don't come Don't do that. But, don't come for but, all
but
the hot.
What I'm, but my point is,
leave the sea level guys alone.
Yeah.
To really make it in that creative class world where you're able to operate without the safety net of, you know, a salary job and a boss and healthcare and a 401k, I think the people who don't come from that wealthy background and don't have that safety net, who are just born into poverty and not having shit to begin with, makes them a little bit more fearless, you know, to tackle that.
True.
Definitely.
You know, that open,
definitely.
Open world.
Yeah. I grew up, I think you could say kind of poor, pretty much. It seems like hyperbole to say it, but let's say lower middle class.
Yeah.
And so I don't, the feast or famine stuff doesn't bother me as much because it's not scary. Because it's fine. It's fine to not have that much money. You don't really...
Yeah, you know how to live poor.
I disagree. All I think about is being more rich than I am. You know, that's really... It dominates my mind, but I'm also not willing to do bad stuff to get there.
Yeah, you know what definitely,
I'm
yeah.
Like, I say this all the time. I'm like, these people that are like... People are so mad about this Bezos going to space shit. And I'm like, guys, what do you think these, or like when they find out that, like, you know, the CEO of their favorite corporation is a Trump supporter, it's like, of course they are.
Yeah.
Guys. You don't get that rich by being good.
Right.
You have to be bad.
Right.
Like, you have to step on necks to get to the top. And like, I'm just not willing. I'm just not a killer like that. I'm just not.
Well, you step on some necks, but not, and you know, not enough to get on a Bezos level. But we all step on a little bit of necks sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure I've done some neck stepping at some point.
There's a level of that though, where I think you have to decide, like, okay, like, am I? It's like being a drug addict. You kind of know when you're like, okay, I'm going to the dark side now. I'm in the dark side, and I'm aware that I'm in the dark side, and I made the decisions to get to the dark side. It's very similar. Like, you know when you're about to cross, and you can either stop yourself or you can continue.
It's true.
That's what I mean.
As a former drug addict, I can say there's a Rubicon that you cross, you know. And usually involves stealing from your parents. That's usually the one where you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, slow down. There's worse things in the world.
No, that's the start. That's the start, I'm saying. That's the start of the bad stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that always reminds me that that scene in Sideways where he visits his mom.
Oh God, yeah.
And then steals from her purse, and while he says, I'm gonna go use the bathroom. That one
heartbreaking.
That one really hit close to home.
I think it's not even from the. He goes into her bedroom and steals like from a sock or something in her.
Yeah,
drawer.
He's like, I'm gonna go up and take a squirt real quick, and then goes up into her bedroom, pulls the knot of savings out from her sock drawer, and peels off a couple hundreds so he can, you know, take
all to support his natty habit.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that there. I mean, there's a lot of similarities here. You know, there really are. There are a lot of similarities here, but. Luckily I never stole from my parents. I'm shocked to say that.
Well, you know, you picked up your drug habit later in life when you had a little do-re-mi coming in.
I had a little scratch to blow myself, but it'd be a little cooler for my memoir if I did, you know.
What were you into, Chris?
A little thing called OxyContin. You may have heard of it. It's sweeping the nation.
Well, not just that. That was just the tipping point.
Yeah, that, I mean, I was just, you know, I mean, Jesse and we've met before, of course, and hung out a little bit, but I mean, we ran in similar circles at certain times in our lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some commonality there, but from what I know about you, Jesse, you were doing the real stuff.
Well, OxyContin's pretty fucking real, but yeah, I was a heroin addict.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying though, I think that when I look back, part of me is like, I wish I would have done heroin. I could have saved a lot of money. Like, I don't know why. Like, it's just, but it's fully like a stigma thing. Or even for me, like, I wouldn't know, I didn't necessarily know where to get that.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Like,
I don't even know where to start.
I'm going to say it wasn't always easy to get it.
Really?
But yeah, well, I remember I had this, the weirdest dealer I had made me come all the way up to Harlem, and I had to get on a payphone and pretend I was talking on it and put the money in the coin slot. And then she would be on the payphone next to me, pretending she was talking, and I'd have to go, hey, this phone isn't working. Is your phone working? And then we'd switch phones, and my shit would be in that coin slot, and her money would be in the other coin slot. We did this charade every other day.
That's actually like so extreme. That seems so unnecessary.
But the thing is, I was beholden to her. You know, she was giving me what I needed, so I couldn't say, hey. This is really stupid.
It wasn't your place to suggest maybe a new drug delivery method.
Maybe I just hand you money and you hand me drugs, because mm-hmm. no one's going to bother. No one notices.
So you sent her a keynote of some new options, and she didn't even open the document, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Came back unopened.
But what era this is? Is this like 90s or is this early 2000s?
This was 2001, 2002.
So right before you started working at Vice.
Yeah.
I saw that you, so we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, but Index is my favorite magazine of all time.
Oh, wow.
Like, cool. I have collected all the issues. Like, I really, it was a very pivotal thing for me to discover when I was like in high school.
Right.
I didn't realize you worked there.
I did. Yeah.
Was that your first job?
It was. So yeah, I was, every summer in college, I was a process server, like I serve subpoenas.
You've been served, bitch.
I've said that so many times, I can't count.
Bro, don't you weigh like 130?
No, maybe when I was a junkie, I did. But nobody really assaults process servers. They don't really care that much.
I mean, it's better to be intimidating, though, right?
I think,
or not even.
I think sometimes it's better to be like, if I hit this guy, he's going to turn to dust. Like, they don't want to like go to jail for murder and stuff. Although I got to say, I did actually have, and this happened in Point Break too. I had a German Shepherd thrown at me once. That was scary. But no, so I saved money doing that for the first 3 years of college. And then the fourth year, I applied to be an intern at Index, because I found it like at a Borders in my hometown in Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so I got the internship, and then, I don't know, it just worked out. By the end of the summer, they asked me to come on as an editor.
So were you writing and editing, or mostly editing?
I was mostly editing. That was where I learned how to edit. And I got to say, I mean, if you know Index, I guess you know who Bob Nickus is, right?
Yeah. But tell the people.
But Bob was the king of Index. Bob was the founding editor. He's also a really great art critic and curator, still working now. And he taught me how to edit, like definitely how to edit interviews and text. So yeah, I got into editing, and that's where I started to learn how to, like, you know, find writers that I liked and ask them to write for me, or find people who weren't yet writing and ask them to write. That's kind of one of my favorite things to do, is to turn someone who's not a writer into a writer.
Let me change your life.
Yeah, let me make you just look way cooler than you are right now.
Mm-hmm. Let me teach you how to make $300 a month.
Yeah. Do you want $20 for a blog post? I can show you how.
Okay, so what do you remember, maybe like the most, you know, influential, or like the lesson that he taught you about how to edit that stuck with you over the years?
Yeah, I think it was to let the things that seemed like casual and conversational stay.
That's actually really great. That is great advice. I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have a lot of opinions on this, but I mean, I think that like those interviews were so, like, that era in general in publishing, I think the interviews were like so loose and fun and seemed a little bit more friendly.
Yeah.
I think now everybody is on such high alert all the time. And you know, it's celebrities interviewing celebrities, and not in like an interview magazine kind of way, in like a Vogue way.
Right.
It's just doesn't. I mean, it exists in some places. I think Apartamento is probably the best version of that.
Yeah, like, yeah, I agree.
They'll kind of like let it rock for a while. But I think, I mean, do you think that we'll see? Do you think that it's possible that we could return to that? Because maybe the public will start to crave something a little more casual, a little more like revealing.
I don't know. I'm not sure, because I think also to have an interview like that work, it needs to be longer than most things are now too. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I think,
yeah,
it's also, no, an attention,
right,
span,
you're
thing,
right, you're right.
But the other thing he taught me that I want to mention, which is because I took it into Vice and made it a big part of my time there, is to let really smart stuff live next to really dumb diction, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So like, to have, like, you're talking about Foucault, but you're like being like, oh, Foucault, like, totally, wow, man, like that kind of shit, you know. Which has kind of become a cliche now, which is why I kind of do it that way, but to me it was a revelation, you know, when I first started. And I think Bob was one of the first ones to do it. He took things like high-minded, like theory mags like October or something, and meshed them with like really chatty fanzines that he was a fan of at the time. And I don't know, I hadn't seen it before that, except in some fanzines. Yeah.
That's kind of a thing that we at least attempt to do on this podcast. We're obviously not as high-minded and academic as, you know, the stuff that you're doing, but Do you think that, you know, now that you've been doing this longer and, you know, you've gotten older and wiser through the years, you're still kind of packaging the less academic stuff along, or are you becoming more of just a true intelligent academic with the way that you talk to people?
I think that, well, first of all, you guys do pull it off, I think.
Thank you.
Secondly, I don't regard myself as an intelligent academic. I think that, yeah, I'm always going to be, I am always going to sound like a Valley girl who just read like Power and Knowledge. You know what I mean? Like, that's just who I am.
So you, by default, without even trying, you package the high-minded stuff alongside, you know, something a little less high-minded.
I think so, yeah. And I'm not the only one. I mean, when I started at Vice, there were other people that I kind of brought in, like Leslie Arfin or Amy Kellner, who were also very natural with that voice, you know?
Yeah. Shout out to Leslie.
Yeah, for sure.
Shout out Leslie.
I mean, that era, I mean, I just honestly think Vice has become such this weird behemoth, and it's like obviously unreadable now. That early 2000s era, it was absolutely mind-blowing shit. Like, I just remember, I mean, I distributed the magazine in Atlanta. Like, it would get sent to me.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And I would put it in my car and drop it off. And the way people were waiting for it, like, it was a true thing.
That's so funny.
And this is in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This isn't New York. This isn't L.A. It's literally people being like, where is it? Where is it? Where is it?
Mm-hmm.
And it being gone the same day that it came
That's
in.
That's amazing.
You know what I mean? So it's like, and honestly, I take away from that a little bit. I think that our approach to this show a little bit is I think that magazine being good and that magazine being free made people really love it and crave it in this way that I think we approach this similarly where like, I'm not going to put this behind a Patreon because I want people to experience it.
Yeah.
Like, I want the most people possible to enjoy this, and I'll figure out another way. You know, we'll do some Triple Five Soul ads. You know what I mean? To pay for this podcast. It's fine. You know what I mean?
If you're lucky, maybe I'll get some Diesel back covers or some American Apparel back covers.
Exactly. We'll get a Diesel back cover. We'll get a Fred Perry spread. It's nothing, but I think that I think that method of like, hey, if we give this away for free, it's going to have it's going to reach a wider audience.
I agree.
It's going to be more popular.
I agree. But you know what? Actually, I want to ask you guys some advice right here in front of all your listeners. Because my podcast is free too, but I'm starting everybody, you have to have a Substack now, right? That's like, you kind of like required, I think, to start a Substack.
I mean, I think someone like you actually should, but yeah.
Required just in general, or required if you have a podcast?
Required if you're
just in this world.
In this world, know, in yeah. If yeah, you're yeah, if yeah. you're a waiter, if you're a Lyft driver, like whatever. but I have one coming, right? And actually, the first, it's going to be reviews, just long essay reviews of different things every installment. And the first one is actually by Bob Nickus. And it's great.
Oh, so it's going to be guests and you, like a mix?
Mostly guests, I hope. But that's the thing. The question that I have for you guys is this. I'm paying my writers because I never pay writers. So now there's no other way than a subscription model to get the money to pay the writers, but I still feel kind of tacky about it.
What you're doing, though, is actually giving something specialized that people want. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think that like, This style of like, I just shit out whatever and you pay for it is going to come to an end. I think people are going to get exhausted by it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, I pay for, you know, my favorite subscription, Airmail. That, you know, that to me, that's $50 a year. I'd pay $100 because like, I like to click on it. Like the same thing, you know, it's like if Blackbird Spy Plane, like he's created something that people are happy to pay for and click and read because it's specialized and it has names that they recognize and it's more interesting than just kind of like drivel for drivel's sake.
Right.
Also, I mean, you're not trying to charge $200. It's going to be what, $5?
$5 for like for a month, which is going to be like two really long essays. So I think it's not bad.
I think all of that is completely true. But another thing that I always consider with like the will it work on Patreon or subscription model is like, are you the type of person who people want to support, or are you the type of person that people are just like, like nobody wants to support Chris Black, you know?
Sad but true.
Yeah, I was gonna say that means I'm fucked too, I think.
I don't think so. I mean, because you know you know, you're creating an environment that is making sure that like cool, interesting, unique writers are getting paid. money to do good work that they want to do in like a free environment. And that's the type of thing that people are going to want to get behind and support versus us being like, do you think, you know, creatine is fucking retarded, or like, have you tried smoothies?
See, no, that is content that I would pay for. Right there.
The grass is always greener.
Well, right. If the world was filled with Jessies, then you know, we wouldn't be talking to you right now. We'd be polishing our Rolls Royces.
I think that makes sense. I mean, I think that, like, I would love to, because Jason and I, during the when we were talking about you. We both realized that we had issue one of apology.
Oh, cool.
Like we both
had independently purchased it on our own, you know, what is that, almost 10 years ago now, huh?
Yeah, 2013. But what about issues 2, 3, 4, and 5?
Not so much.
Oh, okay.
I might have 2, but I was checking the website. I'm going to order the ones I don't have.
No.
Because I'm a completist.
I'll tell you what, man, I'm going to comp you.
Wow, my man. Well, I feel like you might be in a situation where you want to clear out some space in the garage. We've all been there. And, you know, I understand. I think the thing is that 2013 was a weird time to do that. Whereas I think 2021, you would have a much bigger opportunity for that to succeed in a real way.
That's interesting. Yeah. Why do you think that is? Because that wouldn't be my initial thought.
I think a younger generation that you need to capture to succeed or something like that is interested in print media in a way that you were doing.
Yeah, right.
Not in the way that, like, we were raised, like, not in a New York Magazine, New Yorker, Sports Illustrated, whatever you want to say, like, weekly issue way, yeah, but in a more considered, like, quarterly format.
Yeah.
I think it's like, I think about, like, there's a magazine called The Skirt Chronicles that I quite like.
I like it too.
French,
yeah,
women do. And my friend in Greece that does Kennedy. And those magazines are things that come out, and they do a launch party wherever they are, and it's a thing. And they build a world around it. There's a little bit of merch, there's events, et cetera.
Right.
That to me is what apology is. You know what I mean? You did that first, really, is what I'm
saying.
Thanks,
man. But the problem is that I'm the worst businessman ever.
That's not uncommon, but, like, there are people that could help you do that. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
Like,
you just got to get yourself a Chris Black. That's all.
I need me a Chris Black, man.
I do think that the time is ripe. Even, like, going into Karma,
yeah,
which is near my apartment in New York, and, you know, they had a bunch of issues of Index, and, like, multiple people had texted me to tell me they were there because they knew I was looking for a few to complete my collection.
Nice.
And some of these people are 25 years old, though, is what I'm saying.
I think,
and
they, I totally, know what that, yeah, is, yeah,
and,
yeah,
they, and they care about it.
I think you're right. I get what you're saying. The thing is, yeah, I'm such a lackadaisical business person that, like, I did issues 1, 2, 3, and 4 in pretty rapid succession, and then I took a 2-year break and did issue 5. So, like, I've kind of told myself, from this July to next July, if I can't make apology something that's actually viable, I'm going to kind of let it go.
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable, but you have a full-time job, right?
No.
Oh, you don't? Then you have no excuse, bro.
No.
Come on, let's go.
Yeah, I know, I don't. Now I don't, definitely. I did have a full-time job when I took the 2-year break, but yeah, no, not now, not now.
So other than apology, what are you doing then?
I write freelance journalism. I was writing for the LA Times a lot right before the pandemic, where I did some fun stuff for the food section.
Oh.
The one that I liked the most was I went fly fishing in the LA River for carp.
That was where Jerry Sue took photos.
Yeah,
right?
Jerry took the photos, and then Chris from Night Market cooked the carp up into larb, and we ate it.
I read that. I have fly fished in the LA River since then.
Excellent. You have a good
time?
Didn't
even realize I was you. Yeah, I mean, I've done it a bunch of times now. I go with our friend Ariel from Mr. Green, and my brother, and a few other people, and we'll just go.
Nice.
Post up. I know Kyle from Brain Dead goes out there all the time.
Damn, I didn't know it was a whole posse thing now. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's,
man,
like a whole posse thing.
I should get back out there. I was going with Lauren Malik. I don't know if you know her. Former pro skater, now excellent carpenter.
No.
Damn.
Cool. And then also my mentor is this dude, Lino Jubilato, who you got to meet if you haven't out there. He will guide you to the best spots, and, like, he's the master.
He was the guy that they did the Vice Munchies thing on.
They did?
Maybe he's like a Filipino guy who has been fly fishing there for, like, his whole life.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Yeah, they, like, Vice did a video on him, and they showed him catching a carp and then, like, making some some, like, nasty ass, like, bootleg grill situation on, like, an old shopping cart, and so like basically frying it up.
The company, the company I used to work for plagiarized me.
100%.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
No, it's fun.
It's not a surprise.
It's totally fun.
So do you still contribute to the LA Times most often? Is that where you're doing most of the stuff?
No, lately I have been doing stuff. I've been writing catalogs for this gallery that kind of like Uniqlo owns in New York. This gallery that only shows Japanese Americans. Yeah, that's been fun. So I edit and write these catalogs, and then they produce them really beautifully. So it's kind of like, just portfolio wise, it's pretty killer. So yeah, I do one of those almost every month now.
Okay, so you're keeping yourself pretty busy.
Yeah.
So then why are we only podcasting once per month, my friend?
I don't know. No, I mean, I got lazy. It's just like apology. Like all of a sudden I'll be riding a high and I'll be like, nah, but I want to go read these books and like lay by the river for 2 years, you know?
Mm. Yeah. No, I get it. What about, are you living alone or do you live with a life partner?
I live with a life partner. I live with my girlfriend here in Herman. Yeah.
Okay. How much does she light a fire under your ass?
She lights it, I think, the appropriate amount. My girlfriend is a really, really motivated, productive person. She's in like in TV, and mm-hmm. she just grinds harder than like anybody I've seen in person. So even if she doesn't tell me to get off my ass, like watching her do what she does gets me off my ass.
I know what you mean. People, because I'm the same way as you, and I think I was able to really up my production level, my productivity in general, by having a partner that was like really killing it and working hard and being like, I look really bad compared to you right now. So
yeah, that helped a lot. And you gotta show them up, you know?
Yeah, we always have to do better than these goddamn women.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But the pod is coming back, man. I don't know if it's like, it feels like it's dangerous to say that I booked a guest before it happens, but I booked Kim Gordon this morning.
Damn, must be nice.
So he's saying quality, not quantity.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's shitting on our little podcast. He's like, I saw your little Phoebe Bridgers thing. Let me bring in her mom. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're going to do.
I feel like you guys could get her, man. I don't think it would be a problem.
I would love to get Kim.
You know, musicians are, it's nice because they have shit to promote a lot of
music
the time.
Music is life.
Is the breath of life.
So,
yeah.
You know, they're around and available to talk about themselves, which is, you know, always a plus. But are you interested in her entire breadth of work? Or are you looking into the art side of things for this show?
I like it all, you know, I don't really, since my podcast is kind of focused on a specific thing, you know, books, anything else is kind of tangential. But something I like about her is that she would take, she'd steal lines from books and put them in lyrics, and you would only know if you had read the book.
Easter egg,
exactly. There were Easter eggs on like Daydream Nation, and it's kind of
Can I be honest with you? You know,
watch it, Chris.
I love,
careful.
No, I love Sonic Youth as like a thing, and I think there, I just the music, I've never really been able to get into it. Like, I've really never, and I like so much stuff. That's like my zone.
Interesting.
Jason can tell you. That is
like
my shit.
Well, knowing you, Chris, I think their music is just a little too, I don't know, atonal, snotty, unorganized, you know, lacking, you know, some type of succinct structure for you. And that's what most people really love about them, on top of being, you know, musical geniuses.
Yeah.
But when I listen, I love Sonic Youth. When I listen to him, I'm like, these lyrics are dog shit. But I love it. And then sometimes the lyrics will be like an amazing, you know, line from a book that's an Easter egg, and it brings you back around. But sometimes it's just some throwaway shit, but you don't care because it just rocks.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It just sounds cool.
I do love rocking. I mean, there's a few songs here and there, but it's like, you know, I can listen to Pavement all day long.
Pavement is less chaotic.
Yeah, Pavement might put some chaos. They put a little bit of chaos in there, but it's like within like a, definitely like a, you know, 3 to 4 minute song structure.
You had our boy Malcolmus on, didn't you?
I had Malk on, yeah. I don't call him that, by the way. I've never called him Malk before, and I'll probably get in trouble for doing that, but yeah, I did.
You know, he's a big tennis player, which is a subject we talk about a lot on this podcast.
Yeah, we talked about tennis a little bit.
I think he's pretty good from what I've heard. I think he's a real player.
Yeah, I think so too. I've never played him, and I can only play about 2 minutes of tennis before I barf from cardio, but... I've heard from people who know him that yeah, he's a good athlete in general.
What's your what's your workout routine now, Chief? If you used to do powerlifting and you can't do cardio, what are we doing? You got a Peloton?
I have two Pelotons.
You pit them against each other. That's smart.
Yeah, I jump back and forth. It's kind of like Peloton plus whatever that French thing where you jump around on buildings is.
Parkour.
Right. Parkour Peloton. That's what I do.
Pelicor.
What do I do? You really want to know this?
Yes, this is a big... Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you just said I barf after playing tennis for 2 minutes, so you've got my attention.
I just do like a basic push-pull legs split, you know, with mostly dumbbells and kettlebells in my carport.
My man.
Yeah.
My man.
Oh, you set up a little gym in the cribbo.
I had a gym in my garage in Mount Washington, but here I have a carport. So actually the last 2 days I've been trying to build this shed to put the shit in so no one steals it. And it's been pretty frustrating trying to get this thing built.
I feel like you've experienced a lot of crime in your life, Jesse. I feel like people are coming to take what you have. You know,
maybe
what
on
I mean?
Both
you know,
sides I'm, of the coin too.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's funny. My girlfriend says the same thing. I mean, I guess I have. I mean, I have criminals in my family. My dad was a burglar, you know, and my dad was a criminal and a heroin addict and all that fun stuff, as well as a really great guy.
So you've got can't cheat a cheater mentality.
Right. I just kind of, I call it the preemptive strike mentality.
That's wild. That's a whole podcast unto itself, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. One that a lot of people are going to care about.
You'd be surprised.
You're being sarcastic, but, you know, the story of a heroin addicted burglar is, you know, that's what they make movies about.
It's true. It's funny. A lot of people have tried to get me to write about him and, I never was able to because it just feels like sort of self-exploitative. But I kind of found a way over the last year. So I've been working on a novel where he's the main character, but I changed it enough so that it doesn't feel like I'm just stealing from my life, you know?
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, he died in 2019 because of his addiction.
I'm sorry.
What was your relationship at that point? Was it good?
The last time I saw him in person was 93. I visited him in jail and I was on LSD.
Oh, oh my God.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So you guys were estranged, or did you speak and you didn't see him physically because he was actually in jail?
He was in jail a lot, but then also he moved after he got out from that bid sentence, whatever you want to call it. He moved down to
bid.
Bid's a cool way to say it, right?
That's right.
Very cool.
After he got out of that bid, he moved down to live with my grandparents in Arkansas. So I didn't see him much after that, or at all. I didn't see him at all after that.
Not to make an insensitive joke, but visiting your dad in jail on acid sounds about the most Vice magazine thing you could ever do.
I know. I should have done a whole issue about it. That's probably why they hired me. I told them that story.
That would have gone faster than the Eric Lavoie themed issue.
Oh,
so
God.
Something to think about, you know, next time. I mean,
I just pulled that issue out recently. It's really, really good.
It's so sick. I mean, it's really, really a different time. But I mean, that is. I mean, look. I think all we have as people is our point of view. You know what I mean? That's really all we have. And I think yours in this case and what you've told us is particularly interesting and original. So I don't look at something like that as exploiting, you know. I think it's more, I mean, it's yours. What do you,
yeah,
you know, it's
yeah,
true.
Thanks. I think it's more
you
like,
know?
The,
it's like if it's,
I think it's, I appreciate that, man. I think it's like also though, my anticipation of the audience and the blood in the water of like some other guys, like kind of pain, but I'm probably overthinking. It's probably just a really complex form of procrastination, you know?
Well, yeah, that I can't help you with. that I think a lot of us, but are you a good writer? Like, are you disciplined or is it something that you really have to like, do you like putz around all day and then sit down at 8 PM with a pack of Parliament Lights and get to it?
You nail. How did you know that I used to smoke Parliament? That was my brand. Is that just like the Vice brand?
No, I mean we all did.
Right.
I think any. Yeah. Yeah. I love that you think that's exclusive, but you know we've all been there.
You've heard of Parliaments too?
If you were anyone in 2002, you were smoking Parliaments, man. That's just what it was.
You're right. No, I'm pretty disciplined. I get a little hung up on the research phase and just turn that into procrastination. But I have like a 2 hours a day writing habit, and if I don't get the 2 hours in, then I feel really bad about myself, so I tend to do it.
How do you hurt yourself if you don't get the 2 hours?
You ever hear of a hair shirt?
I have not.
It's a biblical thing. It's like a shirt that's inside out of like a really harsh, like coarse horse hair. And you put that on and you kind of walk around in the heat.
You're paraded around the town square.
Right. You're flagellated.
Got it.
That's a great REM song for any of those. If we got any REM, fans out there, which I'm sure
it's like a medium REM. It's not like a deep REM cut. It's a medium cut because of the era it comes from. But yeah, you're right.
It sounds like Jesse might be an REM head. Not to get us off track, but that you know.
Is this like a point of contention with you guys? Is like REM like?
No.
Jason and I went on. We with our girlfriends. We went on like a road trip, and I was playing REM, and everybody. He was just like, what is wrong with you, dude?
Oh, man.
You know, like, why are we listening to Green? I'm like, Green is a fucking classic, guys. Green is about as good as music gets.
It's great.
Jesse knows. And you know, I think, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Fables of the Reconstruction. I think that's underappreciated.
We can play with that if you want to, yeah.
No, I'm good. Yeah, why were these two hot chicks who were not alive when this album came out not into it? That's just weird. I don't get it.
Why would they want to be trapped in a car hearing that? Why would they not want to
be? Call yourself
be?
A hot chick, Jason.
I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about our hot life partners, bitch.
No, but I
they're
think
sexy and they're cool, and that's why they don't listen to REM.
Michael Stipe's really, really, really sexy, especially now.
He's no Moby.
I came to REM a little later in life. It's embarrassing being from Atlanta, but now it's something that I listen to. Oh, we forgot to even... Jesus, what have you watched the Woodstock 99 documentary on HBO? We got a lot to talk about.
No, I have to do it, but because I went to do it on Hulu. It's on Hulu, isn't it?
HBO.
Oh, shit, then I can watch it, because I think there's one on Hulu that I thought was the one, but it was like you need the Showtime add-on, and I was like, fuck that.
No.
But I have HBO, yeah. No, I'm going to watch that.
I mean, people obviously like the Show Me Your Tits, like misogyny part of it is insane, and like kind of... I was into punk and hardcore, so I wasn't going to a lot of like big concerts during that era.
Yeah.
But I do remember that being a thing, but I totally blocked that out of my mind or didn't remember it until I saw this.
Yeah, that era for me also, like I was very much, I was a hardcore and punk guy, I was a rap guy, and I was a like Britpop guy.
Same, bro.
Let's go, baby. My man, the only genre that matters.
Truly.
3-6 Mafia, Pulp.
Got to go from Project Pat and move over to a little early Blur.
The biggest takeaway for me, and I tweeted about this today, is that like because they have all these people, and this is not a spoiler, but there's all these people they interview that went to it, and it's either like a full-on freak rockabilly comic book store cat lady or... like a middle management IT, I live in Connecticut.
Right.
Those are the only two people that came out of it.
Right.
Like those are the only two people types that graduated from their attendance. But the other interesting part, I think, is DMX being a part of that because his music was basically just like aggressive.
Yeah.
In the same way.
Yeah. Very angry.
That,
yeah.
That Limp Bizkit and Korn was. And there's this whole thing about basically a, you know, 200,000 white people screaming the N-word back at him.
Yeah.
And that not being a problem for anyone, which that would definitely not happen today.
No, that's a little complex. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, I was never like, yeah. I could never do like mosh rap. Like, I think Onyx was the first mosh rap, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Jason, have I told you the story about my dinner with Onyx?
I don't think so.
The sequel to my dinner with Andre.
what's his name? What's Sticky Fingers?
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously a long time ago. I was in LA on some cartel business, and I was staying at the famed Standard Hollywood, RIP.
Mm-hmm.
And I was alone poolside eating, and there were no tables, and Sticky Fingers and one of his buddies were like, yo, can we just sit with you?
Mm-hmm.
So I said yes, and I had a nice dinner with Sticky Fingers, and he paid my tab.
Wow.
I did not know that, Chris. That's crazy.
Yeah, super, super friendly. We talked about the music biz. Nice guy, like respectful, really like made sure I didn't pay. It was great. It was a good experience overall. Never saw him again. I don't think he was staying at the property. Jesse, I sympathize on the mosh rap. That is
you
not,
feel that too, right?
Damn, we got to get Sticky on the pod now.
He's around for sure. He ain't doing shit.
I can hit him up, actually. I know him. I can hit him up if you guys want me to.
Yeah, fuck it.
How do you know Sticky?
I don't know Sticky. I'm sorry.
1,000% believable if that makes you feel any better about yourself.
I gotta say, there is one mosh, like mosh adjacent rap group that I like, which is MOP.
Sure.
No, we don't like that dusty. I'm really, really anti dusty ass hip hop, and we have a problem with that on this podcast.
Is that too Max Fish? Like, too Max Fishy for you?
I don't want to hear about. I don't want to hear about like Nas or fucking MOP. Like all of it's just. I think maybe it's partly because I'm from Atlanta and we've done better than that.
Okay. Wow. I wouldn't say you've done better, but I would say that you've.
Bro.
I'm gonna come back around to agreeing with you, sort of. I would say that you've done better in a sustained sense, but like. First record, like, well, there are single records by those guys that are like, you know.
Are you wearing your Capone and Noriega Supreme T-shirt right now? You can be honest.
I'm wearing my Smith and Wesson T-shirt right now, actually.
Oh, there we go. Perfect. Thank God. I don't know what it is about that. I just have no interest in that, and I just feel like that stuff. It just has never done anything for me. Like anything else, if you don't listen to it at the right time in your life, it's like meaningless.
Yeah, it's also very Northeast. It could be related to the fact that you don't like Philadelphia.
Well, I mean, look, what has Philadelphia really given us besides bike messengers and fatty sandwiches?
the dead milkman, which is pretty good.
That's cool. That's cool.
Okay. All right. I'll take that. Yeah. Okay. What else we got besides Beanie Siegel?
Diplo's from
Meek
Philly?
Mill. No, he's not. He's not from Philly.
Well, he cut his teeth in Philly, I should say.
Yeah, he did. He claims Philly a lot, but he's a Florida man.
Florida man.
Oh, I didn't even mean that. Damn.
I know. I might be. Hopefully, this weekend I'll be building with Diplo in Las Vegas.
All right, I'll be there.
Are you? Have you already texted him for the list, or is this like a?
Not yet. I have to. I don't know if I have to go directly to him. I might go to one of his cronies because, you know, I don't want to bog his inbox with a guest list request.
Yeah, it's usually.
But Jesse, what's your relationship with electronic dance music?
It's pretty big, man. Actually,
okay.
Yeah, I was.
It's a big relationship. It's a big relationship.
It's a big,
massive.
It's yeah. It's big up. It's Yeah, man. I was a raver in the 90s for a good amount of. Actually, the time that I went to see
him,
when
this motherfucker.
I did it all, man.
Okay, what? Okay, it's in the 90s. You are a raver going to a rave. What room are you hanging out in the most? Where are you spending most of your time?
I'm going into the room that in Philly, they called it breakbeat, but I think it was just kind of like early jungle kind of music.
Okay.
I'm going to that room.
Yeah.
So it's the room where all the guys, like mostly guys are like on, they're candy flipping, they're screaming, they're jumping around.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll move to the chill out room where the ambient stuff is and the smart drinks.
Can you tell our younger listeners what candy flipping is, because I bet they don't know.
I also love your pronunciation of ambient.
Ambient. That's the British pronunciation.
Darling, I only listen to ambient.
In this home, only ambient.
Could you show me where the ambient room is?
Excuse me, where's the chill out area? if kids don't know what candy flipping is, that's a problem. Candy flipping is doing E and or Molly and acid at the same time.
That's right.
There we go. I just don't think people know. They've moved on to Ket, bro.
Oh.
And they don't, you know, they're not doing Coke anymore. The fact that Coke is back but also not back is really concerning to me.
It's weird that Coke exists still to me. And I know that's narcissistic.
Y'all are still on this thing.
Yeah, y'all still doing that? Because like because I stopped it, but... It's also, it just feels, a very retrograde to me. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it fits in with the times.
I disagree. I think it's a timeless, I think it's the best drug out. Like, if there was a drug that I actually wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
or thought I could do and sustain, it would be that.
I think it's the best drug for a half hour.
Well,
it is. But, and then it turns into the worst drug.
Yeah, then it's just maintenance for 8 hours.
Or 8 hours of figuring out how you're going to get that half hour to happen again.
Right. Just forget blowing off all the conversations, all the fun of the night, and just like going on a mission to find more.
Yeah, not even talking about forming all the bands
no.
that you have formed with strangers.
Could you imagine a room full of the people that you only like met on Coke at 5 a.m. in Williamsburg? Like you see them all sober together.
Oh,
that's kind of what watching the Woodstock interviews felt like. It was just like,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
You know, when the lights turn on and all the cockroaches scurry out, that's kind of what you're left with the Coke Bros.
Did you guys ever go to Cokie's in Williamsburg?
No. Is this a real place?
It's a real place.
Yeah.
Cokie's was a Coke bar.
You could buy Coke at the bar.
It was called Cokie's. You bought it around the corner in a closet.
Really? So it was just a bar that everyone understood. This is where you go to use cocaine.
Yeah, and the awning literally says K-O-K-I-E-S, Cokies.
Oh, Cokies with a K, that's how you trick the police.
That's how the cops had no idea. But they would lock you in. You would walk out at like 11 a.m. I have a business card from Cokies still. It's amazing. Their motto, their slogan is dress casual but in good taste.
So cool.
Very good advice. I mean,
yeah.
So Jesse, as we're closing out, you know, we've talked a lot about the magazine biz, you know, you've transitioned to podcasting, but what, like, how do you feel about the future of, you know, print magazines in general? Are we feeling optimistic, pessimistic?
I'm feeling optimistic. I think the stuff Chris was saying earlier is really true. I think that I started Apology in 2013. That felt like a good moment. Then it kind of dipped, but then there was this big proliferation of magazines by younger people, people that are younger than me, like the Skirt Chronicles, like you mentioned, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think that people got smart and realized a magazine doesn't have to have a massive print run and doesn't have to have a really wide purview, you know? So you just print as many as you think you can sell. And yeah, I don't know, based on like just my book selling kind of like, I play around with book selling a little bit too. And I see like the kind of stuff that like people in their 20s want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's a good deal for magazines right now.
I hope you're right. I mean,
I'm going to stay on your ass about this.
Thank you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, we're your content sponsor.
I need it. Do it to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Give us a call. We'll come over with a pack of Parleys, hot cup of Dunkin', and we'll work this thing out.
What I want you guys to do is stand over my shoulder and do shoulder presses while I'm working. Like really, and look at me really stare at me really angrily while I'm doing that.
That's absolutely no problem. That I'll do for free. Right.
Mm-hmm. We'll get Ladder Fitness to sponsor that as well. We'll make a little dough on the back end. Don't worry.
Good, works for me, man.
We always make dough on the back end. Thank you, Jesse. Really nice to talk to you, man. Pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys.
You guys check out Apology the podcast. What else, Jesse?
Apology the podcast. Apology the magazine. Apology the Substack, I guess, at some point soon. It's all at apologymagazine.com. You can find it all there.
Perfect.
Just so your listeners hear how magnanimous I am, seriously, hit me with your addresses, and I'll send you the library of apologies.
Let's go.
Truly magnanimous of you. Thank you.
And Chris, also.
I can't wait.
Chris, on some like kind of like,
yeah,
some like uncut secret stuff, I have doubles of a few old indexes. If you're looking for stuff, we can talk.
My man. Well, I've got, honestly, I bought a lot of it from one person in Australia on eBay in like 2009.
Oh, killer.
But I need to go through and really look, because unfortunately now it's like kind of split up between New York and LA, so I like don't have a full, I built a little library in my room, my parents' house, I'm looking at right now, and there's shit here too.
I'm just thinking of the carbon footprint of going from New York
to
Australia and then back to New York. Oh.
Jesse will appreciate this. I'm looking at my framed copy of the New York Times Magazine from February 4th, 1996. The Model's Life, Jennifer Egan profile of James King, photographed by Nan Golden. That's a grail.
Oh,
the heads out there.
That's real. That's very real, man. Yeah.
In the other room, my other personal favorite, the interview, Evan Dando cover shot by Bruce Weber, signed by Dando.
Yeah.
So I'm just really, I'm luxuriating here in Atlanta in the Black family library. I'll stop boasting.
You got a nest egg now, no matter what, man.
Exactly. Yeah. For the five people that care about what I care about, I could make at least $100.
There you go.
So yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, Jesse. Thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks.
All right. Later, mate.
Think about direction, wonder why.